It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll find out why a frac sand mining operation in Trempealeau County was shut down this week.
First, 4 weeks from today will be November 5th. Midterm elections will be officially over, and we'll be talking about the results from elections the night before. Or will we?
A new report out from USA Today says that thanks to a confluence of unusual issues at play in this fall's elections, control of the Senate may not be resolved until weeks after the election.
Also, as Election Day approaches, outside money is flooding states with some of the most contentious races. And will the Supreme Court's action on Monday, making same-sex marriage legal in a handful of new states, affect the elections?
It's time for a weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. Paul, welcome back.
How you doing, Rob? I thought I was calling it on the pledge line. I wanted to donate, you know?
Well, you still can after we're done with you, pal.
Excellent.
Well, it's clock's ticking just 4 weeks away. What Senate races are shaping up to be the tightest?
Well, we have a new poll out today that we did in North Carolina showing that that race is basically neck and neck. There was a thought amongst Democrats that Senator Kay Hagan was beginning to pull away from her challenger, Republican Tom Tillis. Our numbers suggest that she is not pulling away, and in fact, it is really just a couple of points difference. That one's going to be super close. We think also Iowa is too close to call between Joni Ernst and Bruce Braley, the Democrat. Interestingly enough, we also had a poll out of our Kentucky affiliates. You know, we're part of the Gannett network, and our Kentucky affiliates published their Bluegrass poll that shockingly showed that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was trailing his Democratic challenger, Allison Lundgren Grimes. Now, that is a bit of an outlier. The assumption had been that she was 4 or 5 points behind. Our poll showed her 2 points up. If that is true, and it is true movement in Grimes' favor and Mitch McConnell's in trouble, that could be a crazy news story on the 4th or 5th of November. We shall see.
Now, in tight races like this, there's some sort of like a black hole that starts sucking money in from all over the country. What are we seeing on the fundraising front?
Yeah, you know, what you see is, and the part that people know a lot about is, you know, the millions and millions of dollars worth of advertising, the television ads on both sides, tens of millions of dollars being spent by third parties as well as both campaigns and both parties. There's all these outside groups that, you know, call Senator Schmo and tell him that you disagree with his position on issue 1, 2, 3. So we're seeing hundreds of millions of dollars of that being spent around the country. The thing that was most interesting to me is one of my colleagues was in North Carolina, again on this Hagan-Tillis race, and found that several outside groups were spending millions of dollars in ground game. They were spending money to invest in phone banks and door-knocking operations, because for a lot of these campaigns, what's going to matter more than anything else is how much turnout you get in a midterm election with an unpopular president for the Democrats. They need to get all of their Democratic base out to the polls. And so people are spending a lot of money in trying to motivate particularly Democratic voters to get to the polls and vote.
Now, I've seen complaints from kind of veteran political strategists, and I'm talking over the last 5 or 10 years here, that the parties have forgotten that kind of old-fashioned ground game politics. They put all their money into TV ads and high-tech stuff. Is that changing? Are we seeing a return to the past here?
You know, I think it's a bit of both, really. I mean, the high-tech stuff helps you target your advertising, but it also helps you target your door knocking. It also helps you target yard signs. You know, I mean, it's a bit of and or. I mean, you don't see the money being spent in yard signs and direct mail because it's a relatively small portion of the money compared to what you spend on TV, because TV is just more expensive and covers more people. You get to more people that way. But for the real targeting, you spend a lot of money on a really good mailing list and some really smart digital people, and you can start targeting pop-up ads to the individual viewer on their computer. You can target individual ads to the TV viewer who's using their cable box. So you you are still doing some of the traditional door knocking and get out the vote stuff. It's just you've got a lot more high-tech tools to help you do it.
Now, come election night, we were talking about this just a bit earlier in the setup. I'm kind of impatient when I go to bed on Tuesday night. I want to know who won. That may not happen when it comes to the U.S. Senate this year, it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm going to kill myself. Yeah, I mean, it's this year has, we talk about this a lot in previous years, that you know some of these races might come in late. The problem is we believe Republicans are going to pick up at least 3 seats in the Senate. If they pick up a net of 6, they will control the Senate in 2015. The problem is some of those races, Alaska is going to be a very close race. Senator Mark Begich is facing a significant challenge from a guy named Dan Sullivan. It's going to be a very close race. The polls don't close until like 1 o'clock Eastern time, in the morning, that is. It takes a long time for all those ballots to come to Juneau to be counted. It may be weeks before we know the outcome in Alaska. In Louisiana, there's likely to be a runoff because we don't think that either Mary Landrieu, the Democratic incumbent, or Bill Cassidy, her Republican challenger, her primary Republican challenger, there's another one too, we don't think either one of them is going to get 50%. If they don't get 50%, they go to a runoff. That doesn't happen until December 6th. We may not know who is the senator. We may not know whether that senator tips the balance. There's even a third one in Georgia. There's a possibility that they have a runoff as well. That runoff isn't until January. So it could go until next year before we know who is in charge of the Senate.
And even then, there's talk of something happening like the late Senator Jeffords, who famously switched parties during the George W. Bush administration, I believe it was.
Yep.
Is there talk about, hey, if Republicans are a seat or two away or vice versa, that there are targets that they would try to get to switch?
Yeah, that's the Hail Mary. I wouldn't put that on the front burner of things I expect to worry about in the weeks after the election. But it's really an interesting thought that if we are at 50-50 or somewhere near 50-50, there are a couple of senators out there who seem like they might be targets for a possible to caucus with Republicans. For instance, there's an independent running for Senate in Kansas who is in position at this point to beat the sitting Republican senator, Pat Roberts. His name is Orman. If Orman wins, might he caucus with Republicans? Possibly. Is it possible that Angus King from Maine, the independent, who is already in the Senate, might choose to caucus with Republicans if it looks like that puts him in a majority and he gets something for it? Possibly. Again, I'm not banking on those, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
We're speaking with Paul Singer. He's politics editor at USA Today. He joins us every week at this time to give us the lowdown on what's happening in Congress. We'll continue the conversation and maybe look at possible lawsuits in those close Senate races coming up in just a bit. We're back now with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week with the scoop on Congress. We're still talking about the Senate elections, Paul. There's some speculation here in Wisconsin, no Senate election, but the race might be so close. There have been ballot questions, voter ID laws being put in place, questions that this election could end in the courts. There was the Franken-Coleman race in Minnesota a few years back, so close it ended up in the courts.
Right.
Are you expecting to see some key Senate races, maybe the fate of the whole U.S. Senate, going into the courts?
Expecting would not be my word for it,
fearing.
But it is certainly not outside the realm of possibility. One of the things that I would suspect before we get to the courts, start with the possibility of a recount, right? Where if any of these races is within, you know, a few thousand votes, depending on what state you're in, there could be automatic recounts. There can be challenges brought, which could, again, drag this whole process out for weeks or months. Officially, there's still a legal challenge, I believe, kicking around in Mississippi, where Chris McDaniel has never fully conceded the race to Thad Cochran for that Senate seat, and that was a Republican primary. So some of this stuff, if it gets into the courts, can take a really long time. My recollection is the Franken race, and forgive me for being weak on my details here, but the Franken race, I think, went on for more than a month after the election.
At least, I think, yeah.
And, you know, so in worst-case scenarios, some of this stuff drags out a while. Now, I will say that for the most part, courts tend to be pretty aggressive about resolving even legal challenges in election cases as quickly as possible because they understand the pressing need for fast action. I mean, you will remember, no doubt, the 2000 presidential election went all the way to the Supreme Court and still was resolved by December 12th of that year. Now, not knowing who the winner of the presidential election between November 4th and or whatever the date was that year, first week of November and the second week of December, was pretty dramatic and exciting. But even so, that shows you the courts are very serious about moving as quickly as possible.
Well, speaking of the U.S. Supreme Court, they issued a non-decision at the beginning of this week on same-sex marriage, said we're not taking this up, made it same-sex marriage effectively legal in Wisconsin and other states as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does it do to that, if anything, as an issue in congressional elections this year?
We had the same question, and we sent one of our reporters out to go look into that. You know, is this going to be a major issue driving people to the polls? And surprisingly, the answer was no. We think where this becomes a bigger issue is in 2016 in the presidential elections, because the presidential candidates are going to have to say something about what they expect to do on gay marriage, what they, it'll matter in who they're appointing, who they plan to appoint to Supreme Court openings that may come available. But at the moment, there are not a lot of ballot initiatives on gay marriage that are going to drive people to the polls in key races. And at this point, you have gay marriage now being legal in, I think it's 30 states. So there's not a lot of argument over the issue in these places, or not a lot of argument that the Senate candidates that we really care about have to make a case. So it has not become the kind of driving issue. And in fact, interestingly, both the Democrats and the Republicans we talked to said, meh, we don't think that's an issue at the ballot box this year.
Now, the Human Rights Campaign and Advocacy Group made this comparison. They say, hey, now over half Americans, 52%, live in states where same-sex marriage is legal. But they criticize Republicans, saying only 8 Republicans in Congress support the right to same-sex marriage. So is that a potential problem for the Republican Party? And are we at a point where it isn't, should I oppose same-sex marriage or be quiet, but is there an option for Republicans to support it?
Again, that's in 2016. I think that's where you see that play out, because then it becomes a national question. I mean, in the states where this is being resolved, I mean, I'm relatively certain in a lot of these heavily Republican states, Republican candidates and Republican senators don't feel a need to endorse gay marriage. Now, when you get into a national election, a presidential election, and you're trying to lure moderate, independent, and some Democratic voters to support a presidential ticket, that's when it becomes difficult, because that's when you have to actually say, well, I either am in favor or am opposed to gay marriage, and you're in jeopardy of losing some chunk of voters that you really need. For the senators, one of the reasons the Republican senators are not have not been big supporters of gay marriage is they don't have to be. In their states, they are safe, and in the primary races particularly, they are safer to be opponents of gay marriage than they are to be supporters.
One more issue, a recent USA Today report updating us on travel expenditures by Wisconsin's congressional delegation.
Yeah.
What's going on? Are we talking about laws being violated, or just
no.
Looking at where the money's coming from and where people are going?
This is really interesting. One of my colleagues who writes for the Gannett newspapers in Wisconsin did this study. And it's really a part of a larger effort we're making to look at national travel trends amongst members of Congress. What's interesting here is that several years ago, Congress tried to eliminate travel paid for by private interests that have a lobbyist. This all comes out of the Jack Abramoff scandal that I'm sure your listeners remember. They didn't want members of Congress taking lavish trips from lobbyists. But what they did was they wrote the rules in such a way that said, well, if you're a private organization with a lobbyist, you can't support travel. So travel, privately paid travel, disappeared. But there was a loophole that said if you were a nonprofit organization, you could still support travel and still pay for members of Congress to go on trips abroad. So a bunch of organizations, most notably like the American Israel Political Action Committee, created separate nonprofits just to pay for travel. And so now this loophole is becoming fairly rich, and we're seeing a significant expansion in travel overseas by members of Congress on the dime of these private interest groups, but it's not really the interest group. It's the educational foundation nonprofit attached to the interest group. It is a total workaround of the rules in sort of a classic congressional way. We are not alleging any violations of law. We're not alleging any violation of the rules. What we are doing is showing just how Congress likes to write rules for itself and then find ways to work around them.
Well, that's all the time we have, Paul, but we'll throw that article listing Wisconsin's delegation's travel on the Central Time Facebook page. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. Have a great day. I'll talk to you again.
That's USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us each week at this time with the latest from Congress.